There was definitely something that happened to these people that was earth-shattering and completely has shaken up their lives.
If you want access to the best real ghost stories,
I think she was afraid that they were going to make her little friend go away.
Real accounts of the dead coming back to life.
She had a spirit that she had gotten very close with.
Real video and images of ghosts.
A little boy.
Then you need to be an extra podcast person, also known as an EPP. Sign up to be one for only $5 a month at ghostpodcast.com.
I stared transfixed as the mist began to gradually become more solid and translucent, and to my shock, more human in appearance.
Your support is what keeps our show on the air. For only $5, you'll have access to hundreds of EPP exclusive episodes, updated weekly, exclusive video content, and more.
Behind me in my kitchen, I hear a little girl say, "Are you my daddy? Where's my daddy?"
Keep us on the air and get access to the best ghost stories and more now at ghostpodcast.com. And thanks for your support.
Stories online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a little girl trusts the disembodied voice that may have saved her life. A man is startled to see a ghost that is startled to see him. Co-workers do not believe a listener's claim to hear creepy music until she captures it in a recording. And something likes to use its breathing to terrify a young man for years. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Did I not give you enough time to cough?
No, I was talking about breathing there, and then suddenly I felt like I couldn't breathe for a moment. And it's that season, and I hate it. And I used to be like this when allergy season came up, it would be a lot of sneezing for me. I don't even do that so much. I don't even have like the super congestion that I used to when I was a kid. Now it's like I feel like it's difficult to get as full of a breath as I used, like I can during summer. Like very full. But then once fall rolls around, and then till roughly about April, May, I'm still kind of like, it's almost like asthmatic for a little while. Right? I can't quite get a... And then it gets really bad, you know, around January when if I do get a cold or something, then it's hard to get it back. And I start coughing. And then we run into the season of coughing on the show.
You might have asthma. I have asthma.
I don't know. Some version of it?
Mm-hmm.
Like seasonal?
I don't know about seasonal asthma, but the way you and I both get bronchitis, that was one of the things that my doctor took into account.
And I never used to get bronchitis, ever. Then once you get it, though, you start getting it all the time. Isn't that how that works?
Yeah.
It's like you open the door. It's like playing with a Ouija board.
Yeah.
You play with the Ouija board, the stuff starts coming. Get bronchitis once, the demons start invading your lungs.
That's it.
That's how it works. Damn. I just feel it. I just feel like the season is coming. So I apologize in advance for coughing fits. And
okay, is that your one time of ranting about it this season?
Week.
No. You always do
this
week. I'm full of snot. I can't breathe.
I'll do a YouTube video on it where we really get detailed on it. Full of snot. And
you become the snot witch.
That was a good one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty gross. Is that Cisco? Mm-hmm. Snot witch? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That goes way back.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, if you're wondering where the snot witch was, so it's a very early episode of the show and very gross as well. So if you're into snot and ghosts, my goodness, that's the ghost story for you. So just in case, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to our first ghost story of the day. And this one comes into us from Jennifer, not the Jennifer that's sitting across from me. It says, "Good evening, Tony and Jenny Bruschi. My name is Jennifer from Austin, Texas. This story takes place in 1996, I was in first grade, and I stayed late to play with a classmate. Her parents picked her up, and I walked home. And I lived a mile away, so it was nothing unusual. As I was walking home alone, a car stopped on the side of the road. A thin man with brown hair and glasses opened the car door and asked me to get in. I noticed that a woman with a ponytail was driving. He said he had a puppy and candy for me. If I get into the car, I can have it. I was thinking about getting in the car. When I stepped closer to the dark car, I heard a woman's voice. It was very strong. The voice said, "Do not talk to strangers." I immediately looked around and nobody was there. It was just me, the man in his car, and the woman driving it. The voice sounded like it came from behind me. At that instant, I ran away from the street into the train tracks and went another way home. Never told my parents what happened. I don't know if this was a ghost or a spirit guide, but I'm thankful for that voice. I probably wouldn't be here today. What are your thoughts? I have many more stories to share. I'll write in again soon. Thanks, Jennifer, from Austin, Texas.
I think sometimes, for whatever reason, there's just a spirit that just watches out for kids. It may be somebody you know or knew, it may not. But I kind of think, you know, we've had a few save the kid from danger stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody really knows who it could have been.
You know, I think every time we get a story like that, a lot of times people are searching for, oh, is it a grandpa? Is it an aunt? Is it a somebody dead that was a loved one? That are they watching out for me? And I think in some cases there's evidence to point towards a specific individual. But I honestly think more times than not, it's just kind of the wandering spirit out there that is still being a human.
Mm-hmm.
And had a human been walking down the street at that moment in time and witnessed that going on, they probably also would have spoken up and done the right thing to help the girl. I think sometimes you have that. Maybe it's like, you know, just a wandering spirit. I'm going to go over here and screw with these people. But, oh, shit, look what's going on here. I have to conjure up whatever I can to try and communicate to this person, and they just do it.
Right.
And it's the Good Samaritan ghost.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the person. Probably never interact with them again, but they're just doing, being a good soul, if you will. So I think that may be all it was.
Yeah.
But good story. Thank you for sharing that with us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. At Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Of course, you can also write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And remember, bunk bed bells, we are giving those out now to yearly EPPs. When you get that yearly membership, you get a free month of the show and a bunk bed bell. All the info is at ghostpodcast.com. And if you already are a monthly EPP, just upgrade your membership. Do it as a little early holiday present to yourself. And then get a bunk bed bell.
And then give that to somebody you care about.
And they'll be like, what the hell is Real Ghost Stories Online? And why does it say bunk bed bell?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought I was getting like a new toaster or one of those fryers that are oilless. You know?
It fits in a jewelry size box, guys.
You could totally ruin your relationship with that. With like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. And hide it, make it really dramatic, hide it in the tree or somewhere like where you'd normally hide like an engagement ring or something really special. And, oh, look, I found one more gift over here. Oh, this is she almost faints.
Yeah.
And you pull it out.
And it's a bunk bed
bell. We can ring along with Tony and Jenny now. You probably get a bunk bed imprint on your forehead after that. Bunk bed bell imprint on your forehead.
Yeah.
As the gift is gently returned to you. So I suggest using it for yourself. Although some people do listen in a family fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So for some, it may be the best gift ever. It's up to you. Just use judgment. Ghostpodcast.com for that. Our next letter, Leah Dawn writes in, hello, Tony and Jenny. It's Leah Dawn from Newfoundland. I've written in before about the house I grew up in and the house I currently live in. Today, I thought I would tell you about the experience that happened a few years ago while I was traveling in my home Providence. My de facto sister-in-law was working one summer at a theater festival in a place called Grand Bank, located on the Burren Peninsula, the south coast of Newfoundland. My fiancé, myself, and his parents took a trip one weekend to see her and taken a few shows. Grand Bank is an old area with some settlements dating back to the 1600s, established as seasonal fishing outports and later permanent communities. There's a real feeling of history in the area. For some who are sensitive, there's certain thickness or richness to the air that's pretty telling of the past. One of the shows at the festival was about a local historical event. In 1929, a 7.2 earthquake struck off the coast and caused a tsunami to strike the peninsula. Entire families were gone in an instant as homes were swept into the sea. 28 people died and over 10,000 were left homeless. The area was devastated. The play was based on the journal of a young English nurse who was stationed there and survived. The names and stories told were of actual residents of the area. It was heartbreaking, haunting, and wonderfully done. It was after 9 when the show ended. The sun was down by the time we reached the cabin we were staying at in the Provincial Park just down the highway. The community it was in, called Frenchman's Cove, was also affected by the tsunami. Here I should mention that the area is called Frenchman's Cove because it was settled largely by French fishermen by at least the 1800s. I myself am of French ancestry. I feel like it may be one of the reasons why only I experienced anything in the cabin aside from being generally sensitive. The cabin seemed to have been built in the 1980s. It was one in a row of nearly identical cabins, along with a well-kept dirt road in the park. We all stayed up for a while in the kitchen playing cards and went to bed by about midnight. The room my fiancé and I were in had two twin beds. We pushed them together, shared the blanket, falling asleep quickly after a long day. I can't be sure what time it was, but I woke up on my back while it was still dark, sometime before 5 a.m. I'd woken suddenly and was confused as to why until I felt a soft jab in my left side, as if someone was poking me, 2 or 3 fingers. I muttered, "Stop it," to my boyfriend until I realized he was laying on my right side and was still asleep. He couldn't be the one still poking to my left side. Being somewhat used to these things, I tried to ignore it, but I felt the jab again, this time harder. Then there were more jabs, as though more people were getting into it. Funnily, I was more annoyed than afraid at this point, so I curled up on my right side and shifted as close to the center of the bed as I could, lying on the crack between the beds. The jabbing stopped, and I fell back asleep. I was woken again soon, lying on my back near the center of the bed. I could distinctly feel someone touching my toes. Starting on the left foot, they pinched each of my toes in order, ending on the right pinky toe. Then I felt someone fold their palms down over the tops of both of my feet. I could feel separate figures through the sheets. I yanked my feet up and slept in a fetal position for the rest of the night. For as much as I slept, no one else felt anything that night. My fiancé's family are Anglican, and ghosts are not something that seem to exist in their reality. Being sensitive, I think whatever was there knew they would be able to reach me before the others. Perhaps being of French background may be more accessible than my English in-laws. I don't know if the entity or entities were related to the tragic history we learned about at the theater, or if the age of the area made it inevitable to find some energy lurking somewhere. I'd be curious to know your thoughts. Fun fact, I have friends who have worked summers at the same theater festival in the past few years, and I always tell them to let me know if they find anything interesting while they're there. They go away confused, but nearly always come back with their own experiences. That's my story. Thank you for the show. My fiancé is a skeptic, but for my birthday, got me an EPP membership. He knows how important this community you've built is, and I think he's just happy I have people to relate to with my experiences. It can be hard to feel like anyone is taking you seriously when you experience things they don't or can't, so thank you for taking this seriously. Best wishes. Lead on.
I think when you have an area that's had a tragedy, you just kind of naturally go down the path of thinking hauntings are somehow related to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. It's always hard to know. And especially being that they're in an area that's kind of close to water, it could be a number of things. Stuff that may not have anything to do with that history.
I agree. And I think sometimes when you have an area that has a tragedy, whether it be a building or a mass area like that, it almost has probably the energy profile, if you will, or makeup of like a funeral home. Of a lot of sadness, of a lot of grief, condensed and you know, kind of quick coming, quick going, that all happened in one area. And it's not always, I think, the ghosts of the tragedy that haunt the area. I think it's more so, it's like a warm, cozy shelter or attraction point for any entity that may be out there.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this is something. It's like the light. It's like the light that you have on your porch at night in the dark. Flies and mosquitoes and anything out there is attracted to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think those areas just kind of have that brightness and spirits are then attracted to it, whether they had anything to do with the original reason for that light being there or not.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
It does make sense.
I agree.
It's like a safe haven for ghosts.
Yeah. That's my long-winded agreement with Jenny.
Okay.
There you go. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Lisa writes in, hello, I was listening to your interview with Adam Tillery today and something caught my attention. I was going to let it go, but thought keeps popping into my head. Adam stated at one point during his interview that they'd been on an investigation and his friend heard a knock at the door. Upon looking outside, he saw a figure walking away that appeared to have a potato sack on its head. Let me tell you why this sticks in my mind. My father lived in an old farmhouse on 37 acres of land in a small northeastern Ohio town I grew up in. A few summers ago, Dad walked back to his door to look outside at the birds gathered around one of the feeders he often filled. As he stood drinking his iced tea and watching the birds happily eat under the warm summer sun, he glanced over to his shed he had off to the left side of the yard. The shed has a screen door on it, and when he looked over, he saw someone standing in the shed, looking out of the screen, watching the birds too. As it registered in Dad's mind that someone was there, the figure then looked at my father, and as he describes it, they both seemed a little shocked to see each other. He said that the figure quickly stepped back from the screen into the shed. Well, Dad said this took him aback because the figure was very clearly a man that had what appeared to be burlap covering his head. My father said that it took him a minute to gather his bearings, but he walked out to the shed and yelled politely inside, "Hello," to no answer. After a few more attempts, he walked up to the door and looked inside. No one was there. He never saw anyone leave, and no one was in the shed. Let me note that my father is sane, sober, and doesn't make up tall tales. I've been in that shed on several occasions, and there's nothing inside that even resembles a person. There are old windows against the back wall and some metal patio chairs to the side. Nothing near the door at all. To this day, my father will snicker at how he and his friend Burlap Man scared each other. I have wondered about this over the past years, and in thinking about it, I wanted to share a thought. There's a river that runs through my hometown, and back during Civil War days, the river was part of the Underground Railroad. Slaves would travel northward along the river, and many of the houses in the town had basements with tunnels that once led to the river. Those seeking freedom would be shepherded from the river into these tunnels and to the basements of these homes where they could hide safely during the day and travel onward at night so as not to be seen. Today, most of those homes remain, but the tunnels are bricked up. My sister once rented one of those homes, and I saw this for myself. Well, Dad's house is not on the river. It's very close to it, and I wonder if his burlap man could have been someone that was seeking freedom and found it in death rather than in life. If someone traveling the Underground Railroad at that time had passed, I would imagine they could very possibly have been buried in nothing but burlap, perhaps on the acreage of an old Ohio farm. After all, what else would they have had? What are your thoughts? I wondered what Adam and his crew were, where they were when they saw something like this, perhaps another who was seeking freedom. Thanks for your time and for your amazing podcast. You make my work days fun.
Okay, with burlap hoods and masks, that's been a primitive way of concealing identity for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even made its way into movies as the terrifying mask that the bad person wears.
Sure.
It's hard to know, though, that if that was a ghost of somebody that was hooded and then killed, or hooded and then killed somebody else. Or
killed and put in burlap.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's hard to know. Mm-hmm. The chances, I would think, of the two being related are probably pretty slim. But, mm-hmm. like, even in our neck of the woods, some of the local legend vigilantes wore burlap hoods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just hard to know if that was related to something locally there or what exactly. But it's scary that the ghost is still wearing the burlap hood.
You would hope that you could change your apparel in death, but I wonder sometimes why that stays.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have no explanation on that one. That's one of the older questions I think I've always had about ghosts.
Yeah.
It's like, why do they wear this or that? And through doing the show for God knows how many episodes and how many thousands of stories, I am no closer to an answer on that one than, or even a theory to be. I mean, there's so many other things where I've ended up going, well, I didn't think of it that way. Here's a theory on this,
mm-hmm.
or here's a theory on that, or here's a possibility. I am still exactly where I was on day one of doing the show on that question. I have no idea, and I have no direction where I even feel like it may go.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to make any sense.
No, it doesn't. As far as who wears what.
Or why.
Why, who knows?
Yeah, there's just no real clear answer on that one. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go over to Gabby. Gabby writes in, I work strange hours and I'm often by myself during my shift. I've considered myself a bit sensitive to paranormal activity. Every day I hear things like light footsteps, someone talking quietly, and hearing our office foosball table accessories being played with. At first, it did frighten me, and I would tell my coworkers later that day. I'd always think I was joking around, but as I heard more activity, I got more scared, so I began to ignore it. I didn't mention it to anyone or show that I was scared when I heard things. Eventually, I stopped hearing things so often. One early morning, while I was in the building alone, everything was quiet. I was chatting with my coworker in another state who also works a similar shift, when I hear carnival-type music playing somewhere in the office. Fear overcomes me, and I immediately consult my coworker. The music stops abruptly. I hear it again, and I pull up on my phone and begin recording the music only because I knew no one would believe me. I get up and walk towards where I hear the music coming from, and it stops again. I don't see anything that could play that music. I look for some sort of toy that maybe someone left up here. I look for a phone, a cell phone, where that may have been left and an alarm was set, but I find nothing, so I go back to my desk. The music plays a few times more, and each time it's more and more chilling. I time the music every time, and it's sporadic, so I figure it cannot be a set alarm. A few minutes before the next shift is scheduled to come in, the music stops playing, and I never hear it again. Later that day, I show my coworkers my video. They're a little startled, and they no longer think I'm joking around. It makes me think that this thing that hangs out with me at work as a child, because its footsteps are so light, it always seems to be playing with toys. But I don't feel the presence of a child. It doesn't feel very innocent. Sorry if my story was long. Thank you for sharing.
I would say go with how it feels and not trying to fit it into your perception of how it should sound based on how a human adult or a human child would sound.
Mm-hmm.
Go with your feeling on that. And I don't associate carnival music with a good ghost. I mean, that's just me.
Who doesn't love carnival music?
Yeah. I don't know. That gives me the creeps.
I wonder why that is. I mean, I hate it too.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it? I mean, is it just, you know, the clown thing that a lot of us have been brought up with as being a creepy thing? So now automatically we just inherently associate kind of carnival music with sounding creepy. You know, if you look back years and years and years ago, where the carnival would come to town and that was the only form of entertainment, I'm talking like 1800s.
Sure.
And the clowns, the big top show, the what have you, probably a very happy and exciting thing for the people who got to go to the actual show itself. Was there the stigma of creepy clowns back then? Was there the stigma? Was carnival music viewed as creepy back then? Or was it more so in its original kind of intended fashion of just joyful and fun?
I don't know. Because a lot of times, I mean, are you talking about carnivals as in like more of a circus?
I'm talking like a circus that would come to town. Or really, or anything of the sort where it was kind of like a traveling thing. They'd have the music, the, you know.
And see, I think a circus back then probably had more of a creepiness factor, way more than it does now. because that's when you had your, you know, your oddities that people weren't used to seeing. And then, you know, you had a lot of maltreatment and unhappy people. And it's just...
Let's try to think of it like that. There was, they did kind of, you know, they exploited disabilities, really.
Yeah, they did.
In a lot of ways. So it almost was. I mean, they literally used terms like go to the freak show.
Right.
And things of that. And that was just how entertainment was, I guess, you know, at that point in time. So you're right. I didn't even think of it like that. A lot of that was very much going and looking at things, experiencing things that scare you for entertainment.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where it all stems back to, is it's always been kind of a viewed as creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things we've never experienced or felt in our time because it hasn't existed. Other than in history books.
Well, when history's deemed it, that's not acceptable to do.
Of course, so that makes it even creepy. I mean, you add, not only was it supposed to be scary back then, but it's even scarier just from a social standpoint of what the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are they doing that to these people and exploit, you know? So, yeah, it's like double creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. As we evaluate the creepiness of carnivals. Well, I mean... I enjoy going to a carnival. I just, a lot of the elements scare me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Steven writes in, hello, my name is Steven, and I live in Liverpool. Hi, my name's Steven, and I'm in Liverpool, England. Listening to your show has inspired me to share a story with you. Believe it or not, I've had to muster up courage to share this story, even though it's been about 15 years since I left the house that's central to my story. I've resigned my whole experience to memory until a few years ago. I was engaged in an SMS conversation with an old school friend of mine and recalled how when we were younger, we were fascinated with all things paranormal. I proceeded to tell him about one particular event that happened in a house that I grew up in, and he was pretty shocked about this. As I recalled the event, I could recall more events as I did this. I also shared these with him. I sat there scrolling through sent messages with a question forming in my head. Why did we stay in that house? I knew in myself that these things had happened. Many of the events were witnessed by different people, and some of whom had refused to be in the house alone, or worse still, even go back there again. This contrasted with my handling of the situation at the time, as I had become accustomed to the goings-on. The events were spread over a timeline of approximately 20 years, and I noted scrolling through my sent messages how there was often some significant time elapsed between events. I concluded that these periods of respite must have had some psychological comforting effect on me and my family as we spent our time as a family growing in this house. It was as if there was enough time to talk yourself out of the most recent thing that had happened and seek a rational cause. Life would return to normal, and the next thing would happen. It was only now, seeing the events in a chronological order, that I realized that there was a pattern of activity that was pretty much consistent throughout my whole life there. One of the first events to happen occurred when I was about age 7. I was playing football in the garden at the back with my best friend who lived next door to me. Our gardens were adjoined. We spent hours together out there. On this particular day, my mother had come out to tell me she was going around to my grand's house for a few minutes, and she wanted to check I was okay to play in my friend's garden, where his parents could look out for us while she was away. Which, of course, it was. It had recently been burglared and had a house alarm fitted, and my mother said she wanted to lock the house down while it was empty to keep it safe due to the recent crime we'd experienced. This is fine by me, and my friend and I continued to play. Time escaped us as we played until we were interrupted by my mother, who returned to the house. She came to the garden and was clearly upset. She'd asked if we'd been in the house while she'd been away. She answered her own question by explaining she'd secured the house by activating the house alarm. We'd become so risk-averse. She then told me to come and have a look at the kitchen. Disgruntled that football had ceased, I joined my mother in the kitchen. She stood in silence, looking at the washing machine, which was now positioned clearly in the center of the kitchen, away from its place under the counter. To me, as a 7-year-old, it just looked odd, out of place, obviously. She wasn't really asking me the question, but I could see her trying to make sense of what had happened. I asked her if it had been switched on while she was out, but she said it hadn't. She pointed out how the brake levers were on, and these prevent the unit from moving even when it was running, which of course it wasn't. We pushed the thing back into place and both went about the rest of our day and forgot about, which admittedly wasn't hard when you're a 7-year-old. A few years later, I was reading a comic before I went to sleep, which was my usual nighttime ritual. While engrossed in my reading, something caught my attention. I was alone in my bedroom. However, the sound of breathing was really close to where I lay on my bed. The bed was what we call a cabin bed, and was raised about 4 feet off the ground. Alongside my bed on the wall were the pictures of my favorite football stars, and I can vividly recall how I tried to focus on these and just hope that the breathing would stop. As I tried to seek a rational explanation, I had the thought that what I was hearing was my own breathing, and so I held my breath. It continued, and I was petrified. I got under my covers, stayed there until it was time to get up for school in the morning. I didn't mention this to my parents. Maybe it was so I could forget about it and deny it ever happened. I'll jump ahead to when I was 24, as I think the conclusion to what I want to share raises some interesting questions. In the years leading up to this time, though, there were other events that were terrifying in their own right, such as scratching on the wall, footsteps, voices, and humming heard. And even my partner's face was stroked. These all occurred within a couple of years in between, just enough time to deny, forget, and move on. This pattern was pretty well established. When I was 24, I'd met my someone, who was eventually to become my wife. Before we bought our own home, we'd spend the weekends at each other's parents' houses. We didn't want to be apart as our relationship developed. One Friday evening, we watched a movie in my parents' house, and we were joined by a friend who'd come up to visit for a weekend. After the movie had finished, we retired for the evening. My friend went to stay in my new bedroom, which was up in the attic, and my girlfriend and I went to the other bedroom, the one I had as a child, which is effectively the guest bedroom now. I had a sofa bed in this room, and after laying it out and preparing it to bed, once the room had quieted down and the house had settled, I noticed something. Breathing. This time, it wasn't a child. I was about to buy my own home, and I was about to settle down, but I couldn't deny what I was now hearing. My girlfriend's head was on my chest, and I could hear her breathing. But this was an additional sound. My sense of sound is particularly acute, as I'm a musician, therefore I could differentiate the different sounds as they were coming from. I started to notice fear growing inside of me. It was like life had traveled back to when I was aloft in a cabin bed. I started to rationalize it. It wasn't easy to be, and it became impossible when my girlfriend asked me if I could hear the breathing as well. For the sake of not subjecting her to the same fear that I had experienced, I told her that I couldn't, and that she should go back to sleep. That was the last event that I experienced there at that house. Soon after, I moved into my own home, and we've started a family, and life is very much normal these days. My parents moved out of the house, and to the best of my knowledge, nothing else has happened there. I've since moved house again. A few years ago, I started to write some memoirs of these going-ons, thinking about releasing a book. As I was about a third of the way through the material, one night I was awoken by a light slap to the side of my face. Thinking it was my wife who'd maybe rolled over and caught me accidentally, I looked over to where she lay, and she was fast asleep with her back to me. I stopped writing the book. This is why sharing this with you has taken me courage. I need to live a normal life, but I also need an opinion on what could have been going on for me in the house that I grew up in. Thank you for a great show. I really enjoy listening from across the pond in Liverpool, England. Stephen.
Do you think that this entity has followed him and is just dormant until he starts doing something that brings those memories back?
The timing is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where that's popping up. I was just going to say maybe he's every once in a while bright enough for something to be attracted to him, and it's different things every time, because it sounds like quite a mixture.
Sure.
Or a variety of things that are happening. But the facts that they do kind of spike up when these things are talked about, I mean, that maybe that makes it brighter, and that's what's causing it, and something happens to notice it, or it is something that's following him.
Yeah, I wonder if going back and remembering events like that can kind of, I guess, fine-tune some of those sensitivity skills.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Be interesting to hear after we've read this, and now that he shared it with us, if he said anything spike up again.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know. Our phone number, of course, 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. Anna writes in on one of your EPP episodes. There was a story of a maid in Mexico that her body was found within the walls of the house. Well, in my childhood home in El Salvador, there were rumors that either next-door neighbor had murdered his maid and buried her either at our house foundation, which he sold us the lot, or his house yard that separated our property with just a long concrete wall. Our house is very haunted. But in this house, it was where I experienced my first shadow people. Very scary for a 7-year-old girl. They'd stand in every corner of my bedroom just looking at me. They were extremely tall and skinny. They loved to open my closet doors, since in the morning all the doors of the closets were open. In the downstairs, you could hear all the dining room chairs moving all over the house, glasses breaking, and people running. It will go over all night. Every other night. Our maids will not last that long, since they will state the shadow people will come to their rooms to visit them and try to interact with them. They'll simply leave in the morning. I remember one night I went to sleep to the spare room since I had gotten into an argument with my older sister, a decision I will regret very much. I was awoken in the middle of the night by the maids washing clothes. I was so annoyed by this. Why are they washing clothes now? Got up, opened the window, which had a clear view of the washing station. Now, in the Latin countries, the washing station consists of two basins along with a big pool in which the maids get the water with buckets and scrub the clothes. I could see everything clearly, because it was a full moon and there was nothing there. Nothing. Only the noise, which sounded like it was in stereo. I stood there just looking for like I don't know how many minutes or seconds until I ran back to my room. Of course, I was given many excuses in the morning. Later, after many years had passed and we were in the U.S., my mother indeed told me that the house was haunted. That she too would hear the same noises everyone would claim to hear. Now, Tony, the other day you ask, what does it feel for a ghost to touch you? You never, never want that feeling because it stays with you forever. I was in Italy, and it was in the winter. I had heavy socks on, and I was very cozy and warm, but I was in a medieval converted castle into a house, at least from the 1000s. So, next thing I know, I'm feeling these clammy fingers squeezing my toes. They felt icy cold and wet. Then I went and touched my toes. My socks were dry, but my toes stayed calm, clammy, and cold with the fingers still, like, touching for some time. It has been since 1994, and I still remember like it was yesterday. Sorry for the long story. I couldn't sleep, so you might as well. As always, you guys are the best.
So, I wonder if the noises were residual from the supposed dead maid on the property, or if it was something else entirely.
Really kind of hard to know.
Yeah.
Without more evidence, if you will. But it sounds like there's certainly a lot of stuff obviously going on there, from the shadow people to what have you. Which the shadow people could have been maids.
Sure.
You can't really rule that out. But nonetheless, yeah, a terrifying experience. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I would handle that if, you have all these horrible, scary things that happened to you as a kid, and then later on you start talking with your parents like, oh, yeah, we knew that shit was going on too.
I guess better late than never for that validation.
Yeah.
I mean, really, as if you're a kid and your parents know what's going on, they really can't, you really can't do anything to change
sure.
it. So it's almost like, why let them know, yeah, that's going on? I would say in some ways it is harmful to not validate the kid when they're saying this,
because
mm-hmm. you're making them feel like they're crazy till they're an adult and you finally tell them.
It's almost like there should be some sort of validation if you realize it's going on,
yeah.
if you can confirm it's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I would think that would almost help in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, I don't know. Really, it's probably kind of depends on the child and how they would handle it. Like, would it make it worse? Would it just spark more anxiety? Or would that, in fact, calm it down with having someone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really probably depends. I think with me it would have been helpful, although I never had that happen. I'm just trying to put myself there.
I think if our girls came to us and said that, if we did see something ourselves, mm-hmm. I'd say, okay, I've seen it too. You're not imagining this, but I'm not going to go so far to tell them, yeah, we totally live in a haunted house if we do or we don't. Yeah.
It's freaky shit. You live in a haunted house.
Right, but just make them feel like they're not alone in that.
Sure. I agree. I agree with that. And then I think we should come up with a family song like that.
Sure.
And then we can all sing it every time we see the ghost. Also, it's freaky shit. We live in a haunted house. It's almost like a little jingle.
It should be like the Addams Family song, the Brewski Family song.
Would it have the snapping and everything?
Yeah, it would.
Exciting. Could I start wearing like the pinstripe tuxedo type thing?
And... You go Gomez and we're done.
What's wrong with that?
I don't like
it. It's a great. I could do the mustache and everything.
Sure.
Too. It would look wonderful. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Terry writes, and I've been mentally tossing a coin as to whether to write this down or not. A couple weekends ago, our friend and I took a road trip to Brenham, Texas for my junior college's football game, which meant we were back on the road late Saturday night. We got on the road from Brenham, Texas, about 10 p.m., and my friend went to sleep. I was between Brenham and Giddings on U.S. Highway 290 when we passed a small red car. I noticed as we passed the car, the driver's window was down, and it appeared like there was a light illuminating the dash and the driver's left side. I saw a male who appeared to be Hispanic or of his darker skin tone. Black hair, not quite Elvis sideburns, and not much other detail. As we drew even with the driver, I looked over, and the driver had morphed to a short, darker, round-headed person, and the white light previously seen had turned to a grayish, greenish-blue hue. I sped up and left him behind. A few minutes later, the little red car caught up and passed me on the left and got ahead of me. Then he slowed down. I passed him again and saw the same thing. Normal guy turns into squat little ghoul. This yo-yo passing happened about four times in the distance between Brenham and Giddings. Then right outside of Giddings, a little red car was coming up behind me quickly when I pulled into a busy convenience store for some coffee. I never saw the car pass the store, and believe me, I was watching. I still haven't figured out just what I was seeing, and it wasn't a hallucination induced by exhaustion. I was fine. It was weird, that's for sure. Love the show. Terry in Texas.
I have no idea what that would be.
It's a new one.
It is a new one. And I'm just going to say, insert bad Bluebell joke here, because Brenham, Texas is where Bluebell is.
They've had enough.
I know.
They've had enough.
I know. I don't know. We had many stories of, like, I guess people turning into ghoulish looking figures back and forth like that.
We've had stories of things that have, like, morphed, but it was more so, like, in a...
Like a shapeshifter.
A shape, yeah. Like it's the ghost in the house, and it seems to change. Once it's a little girl, then it's a dog, then
yeah.
It's an old man. But it all turns out to be one very dark thing that's doing this. So I could see that being this. Just happens to be in a different sort of setting,
mm-hmm.
a highway.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's all that was. I was just thinking during that story of, I wonder how long it is until we're going to get a story in of, and I was driving down the road, and then I looked over, and there was no one in the driver's seat.
It won't be long, because self-driving cars
yeah.
now.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
It's going to take a lot to get used to when that stuff starts becoming more commonplace.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, I don't believe... I, what is, there's some Uber ones out there, isn't there? Are these things actually on the road, like... you can get in one and take a ride? Or are they, I know like the Google ones are, like the the ones that do Google mapping and all that.
Sure.
I've seen those, and that take, but they stand out because there's the giant camera dome on top, and you're like, first of all, what the hell's up with the camera dome? And then you look down and there's no one in the damn car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary enough. But I don't know. I guess I'm just not up on this. You know, are there self-driving cars out there now other than the Google ones that you can get or that a company other than like Google owns? I'm sure we're going to get emails answering this question.
I have no idea, honestly. I know in our neck of the woods, there's not.
No. I know in some cities, there are like test markets for it. And there's like a, I believe there's a test market for the Uber self-driving cars.
Okay.
I don't know where that is. And I don't know how testing it is. If it's like, oh, we're in like this, you know, 3-block radius or we're all in this parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's trying. I don't know how that works, but.
I know they're starting to test semis to do that.
I don't believe they put one out without a human in it yet.
Not yet. No.
This stuff is all going to be scary as hell.
It's like Maximum Overdrive really happened.
It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the thing is, what's going to happen? There's going to be a massive outcry with the first big accident. The first time an 18-wheeler slams into the family of six because its camera was broken and or for whatever reason malfunctioned. Is that going to be the end of these things? Or it's like, well, if there was a human in there, that probably wouldn't have happened. Although you, there probably would make, and I'm just playing devil's advocate back and forth here in my mind, of, well, they probably make the argument of, well, statistically, yes, this can happen, but it's going to happen at you know, a 3% chance rate versus a 60% chance rate with a human. I don't know what the hell the numbers would be.
Or whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to guess that there are going to be a higher rate of accidents with human drivers versus computer drivers.
And I can see it both ways. Mm-hmm. I just still feel better me being in charge of my vehicle at that moment.
It's going to be weird.
It is.
It's going to be very weird. And the thing is, it's not that far off. I'm just going to stay. I'm just going to get a golf cart. And I'm just never going to leave our community. That's
okay.
All I'm going to do. It's like, where's dad? He hasn't gotten his license forever. He hasn't left the neighborhood in 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's afraid of those newfangled self-driving cars. Yes, he still watches DVDs as well. Yeah, you know. It'll be, I'll just stop. At some point, I'm starting to understand my parents more, how they kind of stopped with technology to a certain extent. It's like, we're good. I'm good with the records. I'm good with the CDs. They're still pretty new. And then everything else is like, no, we're done. VHS, we're good there. And then everything else, just, you know, you can all go on and I'm going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hit that at some point too. It'll be further than they got, but I'm probably going to, I'll stop. I'll keep using Windows XP for the rest of my life. 855-853-4802 is our number. Andrew writes in, my grandfather, we called Pop, died in 1976. I was 15 at the time. His funeral was held on a snowy day in Maryland. I remember how strange it seemed to see my last name in bold letters etched into a tombstone. My father was a fighter pilot in the Air Force, and my family traveled all over the world. Unfortunately, this meant I did not get to see my grandfather as much as I would have liked. But the interactions with him throughout my childhood were magical. He was kind, funny, and the finest person I knew then, and that has not changed to this day. He had an old-school classiness that you see rarely now and always wore a smart hat. I grew up in a home that was at times emotionally brutal. My father was not really a kid person. He taught me nothing except how not to treat children. Pop was always a stabilizing factor in our troubled family. He was my example of how to be a kind, strong man. I live in Arizona, out in the beautiful Sonoran Desert. I'm sure most people think of Arizona as just being hot. Not so. 8 months out of the year, the weather is perfect, cool and cloudless. During the summer, I walk my dogs very early in the morning before the heat starts up. It can be 100 by 9 a.m. Once the fall hits and the temperatures start going down, the evenings are downright amazing for a walk with the dogs to enjoy cool air and silence. It's heaven. So peaceful. As you can imagine, there's a lot of time to think, watching the dogs maneuver from bush to bush, looking for a happy rabbit or helpless rabbit or wayward coyote. Now onto the story. On a perfect moonlit night, the dogs and I set out for a little exercise. And for some reason, I started thinking about Pop. I'll admit, it had been a while since he had come across my mind. I missed him so much, even though it had been many years since his death. But there were times when I could feel him around me. If I was lonely or going through a tough time. So as the dogs and I made our way through the silent desert night, his presence was especially strong. So I jokingly asked, "Pop, if you're here, give me a sign." I waited, but nothing. Just the crunching of my boots and dog paws in the desert sand. After no sign, my mind moved back to real-life problems like work and getting things done. I honestly forgot I had asked the question after a few minutes. I talked to myself a lot when out on the walks. I'm sure I moved on to another topic. When the walk was finished, I brought the dogs through the door, which is always a bit crazy, trying to getting all their harnesses off. We have an antique hall tree right inside the front door where I keep all the dog walking gear. It's also where I keep Pop's brown fedora hat. It sits alone on the highest hook and has been there for years, a place of honor. So I'm putting away the dog harnesses and Pop's hat falls and lands perfectly between my feet. Right side up, and I mean perfectly placed. It's a good 7-foot drop. You'd think the chances are pretty good it would have at least bounced a couple feet one way or the other. His hat has never fallen or been moved from the whole tree. I mean, never. I placed it there myself when we moved in at least 6 years ago. It's been there so long, sometimes I forget it's even there. But there I was looking down at Pop's hat between my feet as if someone laid it there. It took me a few seconds to remember my walk and my request. I stood there with my mouth open for a couple minutes, trying to comprehend what had happened. I found myself tearing up a bit. Of course, happy that he let me know he was there with me in such a unique way. I knew he was close, and I knew he was smiling. Never asked him for another sign. I got my answer. Thank you, Pop.
I think that's one of those that just kind of explains itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that there was no way that he accidentally hit it when he was putting up the dog stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, that's really odd when something like that happens and it sat there for years and years and years. And
yeah,
it's too much of a coincidence.
And suddenly you just get it.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I wonder, when you ask for something like that and you get it, is that a case where Pop here is always around just waiting for it? Or is it, you asked for it, it's like kind of calling someone, like on a phone.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're not always standing there listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always, I'm talking the living here, you know, back and forth with someone. When you call and you ask for something like that, does that then, like, draw them then to you to give the sign?
I don't know. I don't know if maybe it wasn't just him waiting until there was some sort of opportunity where it was not going to be missed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the hat falling definitely was not going to be missed.
Sure.
And the significance was going to be evident.
Yeah. It's hard to know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing that story with us. One more. Hi, Tony and Jenny. My name's Kim. I'm writing in from Humboldt County on the coast of Northern California. The story I want to share is not mine personally, but rather was told to me by my 25-year-old daughter. On September 11th of this year, her high school sweetheart and first love of nearly 5 years was driving just a few miles from home when he lost control of the car and during the crash was thrown from the vehicle. Though he was transported to the hospital, his injuries ultimately proved fatal and he passed away shortly thereafter at the young age of 26. Now, living near San Diego, my daughter made arrangements for a brief trip home to attend his funeral. She ended up spending much of that heartbreaking day with his family to lend comfort and support, and in that time was told the following. Upon returning home from the hospital after his passing, the family was greeted with the blaring sound of the house's security alarm going off. Then they were startled by the same alarm going on the morning of his funeral. More odd than the timing of these two incidents is the fact that for whatever reason, they never ever set that alarm. As a footnote to the story, this was an extremely quiet young man by nature, and to quote my daughter, well, he's not being quiet now. Hope you like hearing the story as much as I did. Thank you for providing a safe place for folks to share such things. Keep up the great work. Sincerely, Kim.
The timing is odd on that, especially if they weren't a family that set their alarm.
Yeah, then, I mean, it doesn't go off.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it can't go off if it's not set to go off. I think that that, again, it's almost like our other story, fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. So thank you for sharing that with us, Kim. If you like our show, help us stay on the air, become an EPP extra podcast person. You can sign up for $5 a month or jump in for a full year of EPP membership. We'll give you one of those months free and get you a bunk bed bell when you email and let us know that you sign up for the year. All the details on how to do that at ghostpodcast.com. Help us stay on the air. We greatly appreciate that. You'll love the bunk bed bells. They are part of this complete breakfast. Our children both have. We should. What if we did a Ouija board for a gift?
No.
A real Ghost Stories Online Ouija?
I don't think so.
Would a Ouija board work well if you spelled the letter, put the letters in the wrong order? Would it still work as well?
I would think it would still work because you're still pointing to the letter that you need.
Yeah, it would still, like, yeah. I'm just trying to mess up the ghost.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Check it out, ghostpodcast.com. Help us stay on the air. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.